Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. And this is Bookworm, and welcome to a very special, a very unusual show. I have with me Jeff Vandermeer. He is the author, most recently, of two volumes of a trilogy called the Southern Reach Trilogy. The two volumes are Annihilation, that's volume one, and Authority is volume two. They come from Farrar, Straus and Giroux paperback originals, but I've been hearing of Jeff Vandermeer for years because I would get in the mail these things that came from the Ministry of Whimsy. I thought, the Ministry of Whimsy, gotta keep that. An imprint of Nightshade Press. Wow. So I have around 17 of these things. And then I invited our own music librarian, but he also works at the Beverly Hills Public Library, Eric J. Lawrence, to come with me to talk to Jeff Vandermeer, because I guess the truth is, these books take you to unknown places, and I was afraid to go alone. Does that make sense? I really think I wasn't sure I was ready for, I mean, you know,
You weren't ready for Annihilation?
I wasn't. I mean, I just, you know, like, what now? So what now? What is this?
What is the Southern Reach series?
Yes.
Well, ostensibly, it's an expedition into an unknown place or a place of mystery called Area X, with these expeditions that are orchestrated by some agency. It's very vague in the first book, called the Southern Reach, a government agency. And basically, it's an encounter with the unknown, because it's supposedly a pristine wilderness, but there are very strange things happening there. Your perception changes once you're within Area X, and the three books kind of chart the course of various characters through this terrain from different perspectives and sides of it.
When does the last book of the trilogy come out?
September.
Uh-huh. And when did the first book of the trilogy come out?
It came out in February.
Okay. So it's within a single year.
Within a single year, yes.
Usually these things stretch out over...
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I'm being given the chance to crash and burn within 1 year, which is vastly preferable. It's actually FSG's idea to put them out all in 1 year, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Usually the middle book gets trapped in this air pocket of, you know, a year's gone by. People may not remember the first book that well. And middle books tend to also kind of suffer, in a sense, compared to the first and the third. So this way, there's more of a kind of a continuum to the reading experience, I think, for the reader.
Eric J. Lawrence, librarian and librarian, has read all three volumes of this. What did it do to your mind, Eric?
Well, it's kind of a bold notion, Jeff, when you name the first book. The first thing you're made aware of is the fact that it is a trilogy.
Yeah.
And the very first thing that you're made aware of, the reader's made aware of, is on the cover, Annihilation. Mm-hmm. And you learn that the titles of the other books seem somewhat less terrible in a way, Authority, and the final book's called Acceptance. So when you start off with Annihilation, that seems pretty definitive.
I never really imagined it as a trilogy, actually. It was kind of a crumbled quartet, because there was a story that I thought was going to form a fourth book, and the books kept eating themselves. So Annihilation, 8 Bits of Authority and Acceptance. And I don't know what I thought the last book was going to be called, something like Ascension or something like that. But it never came about because, again, they kept eating each other. And that's actually a really good sign. It means that you have enough character and story for 3 books. And so it kind of came that way naturally, which is kind of funny because especially, trilogies are known as sometimes being a kind of a commercial category. It's like you have to have a trilogy. You have to have 3 books in a series, that kind of thing. But it's actually a collapsed quartet.
Well, I found reading Annihilation really unbearably exciting. It made me very nervous. And I felt as if one of the effects, because I'm always looking for my own description of things, was to make you want an answer to questions that the book, in its velocities, was uninterested in telling you soon enough. So by making you wait, it makes you feel something in the pit of your stomach, anxiety, trance state. It is something like what would happen if you actually got caught in an Escher drawing, that kind of endless re-recursion.
I think there are 2 things about the rhythm of the book. One is that I actually hike through this landscape a lot, this particular landscape. There's actually a lighthouse out there, these transitional environments of marsh and pine forest. And there's a rhythm that you get into when you're hiking. And the other rhythm is a weird one in that I had acute bronchitis when I was writing this book. And I don't recommend that as a way to write a book. Or as a way to hike. But basically what it meant is that every morning I was getting up and I was working on this book, and then I was sleeping the whole rest of the day, getting up, working on the book, sleeping. And, you know, it doesn't always mean something that the process is reflected in the book, but I think the rhythms of it in some ways are those 2 things kind of combined. So the dream, the kind of trance state or dream logic, I guess, that you're talking about was kind of reached that way, I suppose. No, but I also was aware of...
It's a diurnal rhythm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it. And I'd imagine that, you see, I thought of it as having to do, you know, in my experience, with stories by Borges, if they were written out at their full length.
Which is a dangerous thing to do, because I've seen that done, actually, like, consciously done, and the genius of Borges is the coiling of
concision,
it.
Concision, yes.
Yeah. I think there definitely is perhaps some of that influence. I wasn't thinking about it consciously, but then I wasn't thinking about much consciously when I wrote the book.
But what I'm trying to suggest is that somehow in this kind of fiction, which other people might want to call science fiction or horror fiction, or whatever they want to call it, that time and space have odd and unpredictable relationships that we presumably have not experienced before.
Yes, and I think with a book like, particularly this first one, there are things that you as a writer know it's not about afterwards, but there are certain signs and symbols that you don't mess with in the text that you then later realize where they came from or what they mean. It took me a long time to think about just the kind of coiling nature of it. And one thing that it kind of connected to was when they had that oil spill. I know this sounds really topical, but when they had that oil spill in the Gulf, for a lot of us who were on that coast, it was a constant draining in our brains.
You live on the Gulf Coast.
Yes. And so the whole time that it was draining into the Gulf, it was just this black morass kind of like growing out of your brain. And when I think about Area X and I think about the idea behind it, I think now that is part of the subconscious part that it came from, is just that combination of things.
Yeah, I'm Michael Silverblatt talking to Jeff Vandermeer, and with me is Eric J. Lawrence, our librarian, our music librarian. I'm talking about his books Annihilation, Authority, and it's a trilogy which is completed with Acceptance. We enter what's being called a tower, but it's going into the ground. And our narrator, who is a biologist, immediately describes it as a tower, while the others think of it as a tunnel. And gradually, as they proceed down these stair-like things, which I immediately thought of as ribs, they start to see an endless text on the wall that seems to be spiritual in its nature. And I thought, oh, some kind of religion, 12-step program, something is generating this anti-world. When you say you write unconsciously, are the second and third volume more conscious? Can you sustain unconsciousness over three volumes?
That's a very good question. I think it's that I've never really written a novel, one novel from the next, that's the same, whether process-wise or what the end result is. And so, you know, Annihilation came out of the subconscious stuff that you then, almost like the surrealists, you know, they would paint over a rough surface, and then they would see what shapes emerge, and they would pull out the things that made sense, that they could find some kind of causality to, and they would build detail around it. And so Annihilation is kind of like that book. And the second book is kind of more Kafkaesque workplace kind of an experience that's based on a whole different part of my life.
Bureaucratic nightmare.
Right, because when I had a day job or various day jobs, there were various bureaucratic nightmares that I would navigate on behalf of the companies I worked for, going into companies, sometimes going into agencies. And it just struck me that the world was based on inefficiency and illogic, basically. And so the illogic of Authority is a different kind than the illogic of Annihilation. Also, the thing about Annihilation is there are pieces of it that at least some readers see as being illogical that are just things that occur in the natural world. It's actually not that, I mean, just to take one example, it's not that unusual to see a dolphin swimming in a freshwater canal. It's not that unusual to see some of the things that are in there. And so the line between reality and unreality gets blurred too by the experiences of the people who are reading the book. It's less real to those who don't do, for example, a lot of hiking or get out in the wilderness a lot, I think.
In this creature we're mm-hmm. coiling into, the walls are somewhat translucent and there seem to be previous drafts
right.
that we see through. Now that seemed to me to be very original.
Well, I was thinking of the life cycles of certain creatures, and although they may not use words, they follow the same kinds of paths over and over again. And maybe one reason that the biologist sees it as a tower is she's thinking of even just the spirals of various shell-based organisms or whatever. So she's seeing it as already being an organism rather than just a thing that's stuck into the ground.
Now, as a connoisseur of science fiction, fantasy, horror, and gothic, Eric J. Lawrence, did you feel more prepared for this than I might have been?
Prepared? Again, I kind of go back to this notion that the title is called Annihilation. I don't know how you prepare for annihilation. And when you sort of see the story, see the notion of it being told in this first-person narration. A lot of the tradition of weird fiction from the Gothic era in particular, or ghost stories, kind of the classic Victorian ghost story, is often told as if it was heard from a friend of a friend. And it has this sort of dislocating structure to it so that it feels more real if you were actually talking to the person that had these visions or whatever that you couldn't – it's harder to accept.
Sort of like the opening of Wuthering Heights.
Right. Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I see Annihilation as a kind of acceptance, a kind of giving in a way that isn't a surrender, if that makes any sense, a coming to terms with something.
Now, tell me. There's a question that's trying to form. One day, just as I got books from the Ministry of Whimsy in the mail, I received in the mail an anthology of stories about amnesia. I think Jonathan Lethem had done it. And no sooner did I get it, then I started to forget things. And then no sooner did I start to forget things than I wondered, is it environmental? Is it because I live in the most famous smog city in America? Mm-hmm. You're suggesting because you live in Florida near this environment, mm-hmm. that changes its ecosystem so rapidly, yes?
You mean the transition from one to another,
from
yes.
From salt marsh
from to... From pine to swamp to salt marsh to the sea, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that there is an environmental model for what you're doing in this trilogy, am I right?
I think, you know, it's interesting because I've until I lived in Florida, I never had a sense of place because our family moved around so much. And it wasn't until I lived
in
Florida.
Why was that?
My parents were in the Peace Corps, so we lived in Fiji and elsewhere for a while. But that's actually, I think, why I turned to straight-on fantasy to begin with, which was a reconciling of different places. I didn't have a place of my own. But over time, this has become the place I think of as my home. And I think when that happens, you do internalize the environment to some degree. I mean, this is Annihilation, you know, and some people have told me this, and it's been very gratifying, that it doesn't scare them, that they see the beauty in the parts of it that are about the natural world and our relationship to it.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Jeff Vandermeer about his books Annihilation, Authority, and it's a trilogy which is completed with Acceptance. We'll continue after this short break.
This is Connie Alvarez. Bookworm is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station in Los Angeles. It costs money to put this program together. Please help support us by going to kcrw.com/join.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Jeff Vandermeer about his Southern Reach trilogy, and joining me is our beloved Eric J. Lawrence, who has been, I think, at KCRW as long as I have, and in our music library. So he is a historian. This is the Southern Reach trilogy about the effects of things that happen in Area X, three genre-bending novels of horror, suspense, and science fiction. Now, you don't care very much about these distinctions, yes?
That would be accurate. I just don't like to spend too much time or energy on it. To give you an idea, the first time I was asked the question of what the difference is between genre and mainstream, say, I don't know, Joanna Russ and Angela Carter, to give an example of two writers I think are very complementary but on either side of the divide, was 1987. And around 1992 is when I stopped, like, answering those questions a whole lot, because what I found is it just got me into conversations about categories and not actually seeing books truly in their entirety. And so it's not that I wander back and forth between these lines or these so-called borders and try to put together projects that erase that line simply because I want to see stories and novels in their entirety and not just one part of them. So if someone says it's a science fiction novel, immediately they're focused on the science fiction part. If they say it's a mainstream literary novel about love, then they may miss something else. You know, I mean, it just, for certain kinds of books especially, I think it can be kind of damaging in terms of the perception of them, especially since a lot of these categories are kind of market-driven.
My problem is that I don't like or make distinctions, but then again, I don't drive. You know, I think distinctions come with accepting the future, and I live somewhere else. And so, you know, I enjoy books that play with those notions effectively, but I'd rather it be, say, one of my very favorite books is a novel by the painter Giorgio de Chirico, mm-hmm. called Hebdomeros. Mm-hmm. And the context changes with practically every sentence. You're in a different situation, and eventually the effect is this mixture of huge excitement and a terrifying boredom. And I think that that's what we're talking about in this trilogy as well, that there's the unknown, and at the same time, somehow it becomes familiar so quickly that it becomes repetitive and anti-repetitive at once.
Well, that's kind of the joke of some of the dialogue. Even the dialogue that they have in Annihilation becomes very banal about something that's unknown, and then in the southern in Authority, it, because of the bureaucracy, it becomes even more of a kind of dark joke that this thing is inexplicable, but our conversations about it are so ordinary and normalized, and yet it's still out there being inexplicable the whole time.
Now, Eric J. Lawrence has read all three volumes of the trilogy, and I want to ask you, Eric, as a reader, did enough of the questions that you wanted answered get answered?
Yeah, no pressure here. As I look directly at you with a very stern stare. No,
yes, and the answer is yes. And part of what was appealing about it, there are instances in the book. There's one instance where one of the characters goes to a bar and speaks to a realtor. She describes herself as a realtor, and has a discussion about various arsons that have occurred. And she responds, the realtor responds by saying, you know, sometimes there's no explanation for it. Sometimes they just happen. And there's other instances where there's sort of this discussion about, you know, the fact that we can't control things, and that there is chaos, and that there is, no matter how much bureaucracy we want to throw on top of things, that we'll never really be in control of everything, and maybe very specifically nature. And so leaving some of the specific answers as to, you know, how this all was enacted, what led to this transformation of this area X, doesn't need an answer and doesn't require that answer to be ultimately satisfying, by still having the answer of some things won't have answers.
Well, I'm very curious.
There are answers in the book.
Yes, no, there are, but there, yes, it does. It's not that it doesn't give you reveals, but there's reveals, and they're throughout. They're not just in the third book. They persist throughout the entire series.
Well, I was just going to say that you mentioned the bar scene, for example. It was very important for me. In Annihilation, it expresses itself through the wilderness context, but more so in a human context in the second and third books. It was very important to me to have that normalization, to have characters that weren't always at their jobs, that were interacting with the real world, and that there's a real world out there. I mean, this is authority and acceptance have what I think are some scenes that are basically set in kind of a unnamed American South that are trying to show you the juxtaposition of the two things, and also trying to not make a point, but show just how strange the world we live in is by itself, let alone Area X, and the things that we kind of drive ourselves to do or think that are highly suspect to begin with.
Now, I want to end with a question that interests me deeply. These books barely existed before they were bought for the movies. Not only bought for the movies, but bought by Scott Rudin, who, in fact, worked on several projects with Joan Didion, including a novel called The Last Thing He Wanted. And Joan Didion said, there's something that happens in a room in The Last Thing He Wanted that never gets named in the novel, and to be honest, I didn't know what it was, but I had to know for the movie. Mm-hmm. The movie could not be made if those 21 minutes, I believe, were not fully accounted for. Now, the same man has bought this trilogy. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to account for all 21 mystery minutes?
I'm prepared to give him more than what's in the books if it's useful in terms of making the movies, but I don't think I'm prepared to give him all 21 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Maybe 18.
I've been talking with Jeff Vandermeer. With me has been Eric J. Lawrence. Jeff Vandermeer is the author of a trilogy, the Southern Reach Trilogy of Annihilation, Authority, Acceptance, AAA, the Southern Reach Trilogy, published by FSG Originals. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from the Southern Reach Trilogy at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to Jane Parshall. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm. He is a bookworm. She is a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Mona Simpson is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.